You're listening to Off the Card, an action figure podcast. A show about action figures by kids trapped in the bodies of grown men. And here they are, Billy Cooper, Eric Murphy, and Joe Gardner.
Today, we got a special episode of Off the Card. Joining me is producer Paul and Eric, and we have a very special guest, David Silva. David, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
For the folks out there that don't know who you are, give us an introduction. Tell us what you're all about, man.
Well, I come from the toy industry, obviously, and I've been working in action figures since 2003. I've worked with McFarlane Toys, Hasbro, and NECA. And in 2021, I went off on my own and started doing Creative Beast Studio full time, which is my own company, and mainly specializing in dinosaurs. And right now, I have my first sci-fi based Kickstarter going right now called Cyberzoic, which incorporates the dinosaurs, but also adds the elements of armor and weapons and human characters.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. When I seen some of the promo images come our way, I'm looking at it, I'm like, oh man, this, of course, everyone's going to say Dino Riders, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
For me though, it struck me, it almost felt more Dinotopia.
Okay. Yeah, I think it has elements of a lot of different things. I think it's completely reasonable to associate with Dino Riders when you first see it. Dino Riders has been a big influence on me. Back when I was a kid, that was probably my most fond dinosaur experience. And we haven't really seen anything like that since then. I mean, we have for the younger audience, but not for like the collectibles community. Mm-hmm. And I realize that's probably because it's a kind of expensive thing to take on, you know, because of all the higher end type quality and the different components. But also, you know, it's an IP that normally would have to have some sort of media behind it to push it. So, it's kind of a big risk to go in this direction and launch something without any media being established for it. But Kickstarter seems to be a good place to test the market. And we have other independent toy companies putting their hats in the ring as far as, you know, original IPs. And, this doesn't need to be the biggest thing ever, but I think it could be something cool. So I want to see what people think of it.
I'm loving what I'm seeing, and it looks like the Kickstarter is a huge success already. How many days left? We're here Monday the 23rd. How much longer do we got?
I think it's about 10 days. So it ends a week from Thursday.
I'm predicting to see what you're over 300.
Yeah, right now. 30. Yeah.
Yeah. I see it probably over 450.
I
haven't bought anything yet. I'm not saying I'm going to spend $10,000, but yeah, no, or anything like that. But no, it's looking great. I loved when I was looking through the breakdown of the figures and stuff. I was liking the how the armor becomes its own ship in some cases and stuff. Never seen that before. That's just it adds another dimension to the playability.
Yeah, and that's one of those things that once you start getting into it, you see the differences between this and Dino Riders. And there are a lot more influences than just Dino Riders. I'm also a big Transformers fan. Like behind me, you see my Beast Wars collection. So I have a lot of different things that I'm into. There's also like there's different influences from Zoids incorporated in some of the armor designs. There's even like one of the clans has some inspiration from Masters of the Universe, and it's just like different things here and there that they kind of create this larger whole and kind of build a story around it. So
everything's got to take a piece here and a piece there, and that's what makes it original.
Yeah.
That's one thing actually I was going to ask was, what was your inspirations that inspired you to get this idea together, and you kind of, you know, spoke on a little bit of them.
Yeah, well, it's kind of been brewing for the past few decades. It started off as kind of a different story, but it similar foundation as far as it taking place with animals and having natural history themes and things like that. But it originally was going to take place on Earth after a big war, and they were going to have like these highly evolved animals, and it was kind of a different story, but it had a lot of the same characters. And I thought, well, let's push it more in the sci-fi direction, put it on a different planet, and then, you know, incorporate more dinosaur stuff, but also bring in alien animals. And that gave us an opportunity to explore dragon designs too. So it was just sort of like kind of following the inspiration to the point of it becoming a fully fledged world, I guess. Okay. Yeah, it's one of those things. It's just kind of growing and evolving in its own way. And a lot of it's happened very organically. And it's been a lot of fun to work on. So
I seen that you're going with the like saber-tooth cat or saber-tooth tiger type slant with like the Ice Age. Is there, knock on wood, hopefully, this first line seems like it's doing well. Is there a planned follow-up?
Yeah.
With any more mammals, maybe like mm-hmm. mastodon or woolly mammoth or something.
Yeah, we definitely want to do a woolly mammoth. We don't have one sculpted yet, but I think that's something we'll work up to. We were going to also do an Andrew Sarkis in this series, but we ended up having to trim it down a little bit because we had too many things that we wanted to do.
What exactly is that? I'm dinosaur and animal dumb when it comes to like the scientific names.
It's not one of the more popular ones, but it's probably best known from the Walking with the Prehistoric Beast documentary that came out, I think, in the early 2000s. But there was a similar animal in the Dino Riders line that they called Killer Warthog, and it had like a long snout and these.
Okay.
It was kind of a weird looking thing, but basically if you can imagine an animal that's somewhere between a bear, a pig, and a hippo.
Oh, I'm so, all about it. Yeah. that in another one is the woolly rhino. I just, that thing. The minute I see, I don't know where I seen that at, but I seen it. I'm like, oh my God, I would ride that. That thing's huge. That's awesome.
we have one of those plans as well. But a lot of these are going to probably show up in one of our other toy lines called mm-hmm. Beast of the Cenozoic, and which is kind of a spinoff of Beast of the Mesozoic, which is our main line right now, which is just dinosaurs and Mesozoic era type creatures. Mm-hmm. There's definitely a place for all that. It's something we definitely want to get to. And the cool thing about Cyberzoic is that all of those, any type of animal can be shared in the Cyberzoic universe. And, because we have access to, in the story, we have access to all of the animals. So they can basically bring back anything. So.
It's endless. It's absolutely endless. It's awesome. At PowerCon this year, if I remember correctly, you had the Arctic Dragon out on display, didn't you?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
That's one of our launch items for Cyberzoic.
Yeah, that thing was absolutely beautiful in person.
Thank you.
It stopped me dead in my tracks. I was like, oh, what is that? It beautiful paint. Who comes up with the color schemes with when you're dealing with more like fantasy side?
I pretty much do all of the color design stuff. Like, I kind of have an idea of what I want things to look like. And a lot of times I base things on real animals. Like, for instance, the Arctic Dragon was actually inspired by the Oreo gecko. Have you seen one of those?
But yeah, it's
mostly black and white, but it has like little hints of pink in it and little hints of purple. And I just kind of pushed that a little bit more and tried to make a dragon that looks natural, because I want these dragons to fit in with our real animals and kind of bring together the entire universe with what we know of as animals.
So. Oh, it beautiful, beautiful paint. That's what always, that's the first time that I ever ran into you at a convention was I stopped. I'm looking at the paint. I'm like, oh my Lord, look at the paint work is just absolutely second to none. They're absolutely beautiful. They just stand out from across a walkway and it lures you right in.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah. We definitely put a lot of effort into the paint, and just as much effort as that's put into the sculpt as well. I think it's all very important. And one of the things that sets Beast the Mesozoic apart from other dinosaur toy lines is the fact that we put so much into our color schemes and our paintwork and things like that. And we're happy to do it. I think it's really a good way to kind of show off the sculpt and give each figure its own personality.
Yeah, these are heads and shoulders above anything you can buy at Target. That's for darn sure. Yeah, they're awesome. Awesome.
The color also kind of reminds me, going back to being a younger kid, of the video game Primal Rage. And the art, the look of the Primal Rage dinosaurs and monsters, stuff like that, that kind of style, almost Ray Harryhausen type of, and then add paint to it. It reminds me of that when I was looking at it. I was like, man, these colors, just real, really beautiful, bright colors, and how they, that's what it really saw. It's like, man, this just gives me, I'm 38, you know, in the 90s, you know, you had some dinosaur stuff with the Jurassic Park figure, stuff like that, but we didn't have anything like this. But the only way you saw something like that was through video games. So that's why I was like, man, this really looks like a video game come to life.
Yeah, well, I did play a lot of video games in the 90s, so that might have something to do with it.
We all did. Yeah. We all did.
It was a great time for it, that's for sure.
Man, there's nothing better than 16-bit. I'm sorry. I think that's where video games peak for me. And
I'm still playing those games now.
Me too. Yeah. So you come from McFarlane, you know, started with McFarlane and so on and so forth. What's a famous like piece that you worked on that everyone would know? We got a lot of listeners. We got a lot of Spawn fans and all those. What's one that stands out?
There's probably a few that stand out from McFarlane specifically.
Sure.
Okay. Well, I worked on the Dragons line quite a bit, the McFarlane's okay. Dragons. And I designed a lot of the figures from the first and second series. And my favorite dragon that I worked on was the Scavenger Clan dragon from series 6, which was like sort of a vulture-like dragon, which had like red and blue.
Yep, and remember that one.
That was the only time I got to design and sculpt the same figure, which I thought was, you know, that was really special. And there was also, which this actually leads right into the Arctic dragon, that series also had an Ice Clan dragon.
Yes,
and, I remember that one.
I see a lot of people, they see the Arctic dragon, said this reminds me of the Ice Clan dragon. There's a good reason for that, because I designed that, the Ice Clan dragon. And I wanted to sculpt it because it was my favorite design that I did for them. And it ended up going to the digital department, and I didn't really get the work on. I barely got to touch it. And I felt like we had too many people involved with that project, and it didn't really turn out the way that I was imagining it. So it was always like one of those things I wanted to circle back to and kind of redo. So when I started doing the model kit stuff for Creative Beast Studio, I redesigned that dragon and did it as a big model kit. And then now the action figure that I'm offering now is directly based off of that model kit. So like an evolution of that design to finally like have it reach its full potential, basically. So that's
it's yeah, finally it's, be able to do it right, do it yeah. justice.
Yeah, it's a very personal piece for me. Yeah.
Yeah. It's awesome. Like one of an artist or a musician taking their original masterwork and getting it back and doing it the way they originally intended to do and put it back out. Like, this is what my original concept idea was. You know, discounting what McFarlane or anybody in their in-house did. It's like, this is something I wanted to do. This is what my original idea was.
Yeah. And I actually redesigned the first design into something that I liked a lot better anyway. So not only is the design upgraded, but also the sculpt and just the whole general concept was upgraded. And but that was the genesis of the idea. Is it started with the McFarlane Dragons line. But other stuff that I worked on early on, I worked on a lot of design stuff. And some stuff you might recognize is there was a Curse figure that came out that I really liked. It was like a cyborg character with a green cloak, and he had these little demons. And then I think in the same series, I designed the Cygor figure. It was like falling, and the Spawn was fighting him on top.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. That one I designed, and there was the Cyber Spawn 2, I think. It was all red. It was like this big robot Spawn. It was pretty cool.
Cool.
But yeah, there's a lot of Spawn, a lot of Dragon stuff that I worked on back then, and I would always try to get my hands on anything that was like creature related too. So there's a lot of that.
Sure, sure. No, that was a different time for toys back then. As somebody that's been collecting toys since the early 90s. Yeah, to see the evolution now of where we're at as far as the proliferation of the smaller indie companies is something I thought we'd never see. At least never see in it sustain itself like it has. It's been awesome. Like, you had little upstarts here and there back in the 90s, you know, but never anything like you see today. And it's awesome to see, as a collector that leans way toward the indie side like I do. Man, there's not a shortage of just awesome stuff to hop in, to pre-order, to kickstart, to, you know, follow. It's pretty great.
Yeah, it is really cool to see, and it kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, we saw hints of it with like the Horseman and Boss Fight a while back, but I think a lot of the resources are becoming more, you know, accessible to everybody.
Sure.
And also, I think the industry kind of needs it at this point, because the larger companies are kind of doing a lot of the same stuff over and over again.
Very stagnant. Yes.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I only noticed this at PowerCon, but you know, there were a lot of indie companies at PowerCon.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And I noticed that we're all from the same generation, and back when we were kids, the bigger companies were the ones coming up with all the new ideas. And it was sort of like this renaissance of toy IPs, I guess, because of the whole commercialized, you know, like you can have your TV shows advertise your toys and all that. So it kind of gave way to this whole new way of doing things. But that generation is now growing up and sort of putting that back into the industry again, like that that sense of imagination and just throwing ideas out into the world and seeing what people think of it. And all the while, the bigger companies that were originally doing that have become so successful from those ideas that they can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting situation to think about.
They definitely fell back on nostalgia, which is not a bad thing.
No, there's
a market for that. Yeah, I mean, they definitely kind of went back that direction. But back when I was a kid, we got to see things like Food Fighters and Barnyard Commandos and all these just bizarre. I'm a huge fan of like Mad Balls. I mean, things like that. You get to see all this just weird, wacky stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff that you wouldn't. Now it's in the independent realm. Where we're seeing that type of innovation and that type of fun. And you're right, it's all guys in our 40s now.
Yeah. Even going into the 90s, you look at stuff like, for me, like back then, Street Sharks, Exo Squad, Exo Squad, I loved as a kid. And like you said, you know, after a while, when your mom and pop deli turns into a Subway, that's kind of what happened in the 80s, that these companies. Yeah. You know, were young upstarts, and then they became juggernauts. And then the best way I can say it now, I guess they may are going more safe for mass marketing and box stores.
Yeah. And you know, that's fine. I think that's still, there's still a good place for that. You know, like I still collect the G.I. Joes and the Ninja Turtles and, well, you know, the Transformers, whatever, the He-Man. I still get those every once in a while. But if the industry was just that, I mean, eventually we don't have much of an industry. If there's nothing being put back into it, basically, you know, how is that sustainable, you know, in 10 or 20 years? It's a little concerning. So I'm really glad for these independent toy companies, even if they are on a much smaller scale, like the total of the whole of the industry is putting a lot of stuff out there together. And I think making the industry, you know, more valuable in a way to the collectors, like basically we're keeping the art side of it alive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like the larger companies are more interested in, you know, like the commercial side of it. And I, you know, I respect that. They have a lot of overhead and they have to keep things. They have a completely different system to work with. But you know, like the smaller companies, we don't have the same system. So we can take more risks. We can try things out. We can do smaller runs, and, you know, and just, you know, see what people like and you know, figure out what to do next as we go. So it's an exciting time.
Absolutely it is. It doesn't seem like there's a week goes by without something coming out of left field, something from the independent community. It's just like, you know, from your stuff to like the guys at Spiro and mm-hmm. the four Horsemen are known to come out of completely left field with all kinds of craziness, their figure obscura line, things like that. And it's as someone that, like I said that earlier, I lean more to the independent stuff. It's like, man, I'm always chasing a pre-order or a Kickstarter. It seems like about every other week.
That's great. Yeah, and speaking of the Horsemen, they're a big part of why I got into this, because I went to art school to do comic books, and it was right around the early 2000s, like around, I guess, 2002, when the Masters of the Universe got rebooted. And I was reading Torfair magazine at the time, which a lot of people my age probably were too. And I started seeing all this stuff that they were doing. It's like, oh man, I can't get back into toys, you know, because I was like trying to be a responsible art student. And eventually they got me and I got back into toys, and I started collecting the He-Man stuff. And I wanted to work in that industry. I learned more and more about it. And eventually I think my senior year, I got a table at Wizard World Chicago. I think it was 2002. And
I was probably there.
It was the year when they had that Keldor exclusive with the
birthday. I was there.
I had a table there, and I didn't have anything to sell. I was just like giving out my information. I had little pamphlets with my work samples, and I had a few sculptures there. And and Cornboy and Eric Treadway came by my table and had a nice chat, and it was like meeting your heroes. And ever since then, I've just been like, all right, let's keep doing this, you know? I feel like they've really spearheaded a lot of this indie movement in this more creative direction, which I think is really cool.
Oh, they're definitely the catalyst that kind of started a lot of this. I mean, I remember back in the day reading Toy Fair magazine, like those guys were rock stars. And then you had Digger from Art Asylum and some of these other guys, like you knew them by name. Like you could look at work and go, that's theirs. And that was like the beginning of this renaissance of, you know, the sculptor being like, name checked on the back of packages and mm-hmm. stuff. And I remember when DC Direct was getting started and they were putting that stuff on the back of packages. And I remember reading that like, oh, I'm going to follow this guy's work. Oh, that is that sculptor. I remember it. So those guys, man, they started a lot. So with back to your stuff with yours, and the Kickstarter's going good. What's the timetable for from, you know, the Kickstarter ending and production, what kind of timetable are you looking at there?
So we're aiming to get the first wave out sometime in November of next year, in time for Christmas, hopefully. And then the following wave, we'll get out about 6 months later in May. So some of this stuff is actually already being worked on right now, like the Arctic Dragon, the Smilodon, and the Allosaurus, even the Dilophosaurus, we're creating fine cuts for right now. And that's eventually going to be used for the tooling. We're already starting, even though, you know, we're still funding. So we're just trying to stay on top of things.
Is any of the your original figures from your other line crossing over? Are some of those molds already cut and ready to go?
Yeah. A few of those, like the Dryptosaurus, which we just unlocked, that is from the Tyrannosaur series.
Okay.
And we're doing some updates to it. We're going to add more articulation to the neck, and we're going to make the feet more sturdy. And then we're also going to add a display stand to it as well. So even when we are sort of reusing a figure, we are giving it a brand new paint scheme and upgrading some of the parts too. But that also helps with the overall expense, you know, to help us get more things into the line as well. So it was sort of a balance between like doing some new stuff and then like reincorporating some older stuff as well.
Will any of the modular armor pieces, will they cross over or cross back to the other lines? Are they usable there, or
one of the cool things that we've always had in mind was to make the armors cross compatible with some of the Beast of Mesozoic figures. So we are selling the armor separately. So if you want to buy extra armors for, you know, a Beast of Mesozoic version of something that is a similar body type, you can armor up a different type of animal, and that way you have like more versions of, you know, an armored animal. And
you could almost like troop build your own dino army.
Yeah, you could troop build the armies. Yeah, and that was always the intention with CyberZoic, is that it was sort of a spinoff line of Beast of Mesozoic, because basically it's all in the same timeline, which is our timeline. We're part of this universe. So if Beast of Mesozoic is the past, CyberZoic is the future. And like, we're right in the middle collecting all of it. So that's the idea.
I like it. Yeah. Oh, it's looking awesome. It's really great. I you hear people in the, you know, the toy community, oh, they can be toxic. I'm sure you've been jumped on about scale. This doesn't scale. Everything's got to be 112.
I mean, people are going to have their preferences. I think people that I've come across on, you know, online, they've been pretty respectful for the most part. And
good.
You know, like, people are going to have their preferences. I totally get the whole, you know, 112 scale thing. I collect a lot of that scale as well. It's just that when you have larger items in the line, like say like a Star Wars line with having vehicles, you're not going to have a lot of room for your TIE fighters and your X-Wings, because you're, you know, obviously your figures are 6 inches, so it makes everything else bigger. So the best way to put this line out there is 1/18 scale, which is, you know, the classic scale for anything that has to do with large things.
Absolutely.
And that's just where we're starting off. But there is potential to do six inch versions of the characters. We did show those off of PowerCon just to get a fan response to it. So that's something we could do. The only downside to that is that it limits us as far as like what animals can be incorporated at that scale. So
we just recorded an episode, what, Eric, last week.
Yeah.
And we got on the tangent of scale, as far as 112 collectors. You can't make vehicles and stuff. You know, it just it gets to the point where they're just too big. You can a little bit, but they become so cumbersome in the space that's involved, you know.
Yeah. I remember seeing that TIE fighter that they did for Star Wars Black Series.
We brought that up
specifically, actually. Yeah.
There's no way. That's a troop builder, you know.
Yeah, but that set at the end cap at Toys R Us until they shut the doors, you know, it just. Yeah. And I know dealers. I have no toy dealers, and they're like, "Man, it doesn't matter if that thing caught fire and it was hot or not. It's too big to take to shows. I mean, it's unruly." And you see, all the great playsets are not 1/12 scale. All the great playsets are smaller. You know,
They kind of have to be. Yeah.
You look at the G.I. Joes we grew up with. I mean, those vehicles, yeah, they're playsets too, though. You know, That just works together. So I'm with you there. It just doesn't, 1/12, it, you know, as much as everyone loves it, it doesn't lend itself to really cool, you know.
No, it's great if your focus is just characters. I think it works really well for that. But if you're trying to like create a whole world, it's not feasible. So, you know, it kind of depends on what your expectations are, I guess, for what your collection is going to look like.
Right. I mean, at what point does everyone that has the Super 7, Snake Mountain, and then the Cat's Lair, and I mean, holy, I'd have to add a whole wing to my house to even display that stuff. I mean, it's massive. It's awesome. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I mean, but
I do have the Snake Mountain and the Castle of Grayskull, and, That's pushing it for me.
Right? I mean, that's a wall, right? I mean,
it's a good bit of space. Yeah. I wasn't even able to get Snake Mountain until I got my dedicated studio here. So, you know, up until that point, I was like, there's absolutely nowhere to put that. So I'm not buying it. My wife
had kittens when she seen me bring in the Galactus box. I mean, she's like, what are you going to be? Are you going to sleep with that? Because you're.
Yeah. Some of these things can get really big with 1/12 scale. I mean, don't get me wrong.
I would pay huge money for a 1/12 scale Mastodon. I think it would be absolutely amazing. But where am I going to put it? I mean, it's the size of a dog.
I remember when, like, after I did my 1/6 scale Raptor series, the first Kickstarter. And then I announced the Ceratopsians were going to be 1/18 scale. I got a fair bit of pushback on that because people wanted the Ceratopsians to be in scale with the 1/6 scale Raptors. A 1/6 scale Triceratops, I made like a little chart to show people how big that would be. It's about the size of a pig in real life. So, I mean, it's like you probably aren't going to be buying that. Likely.
I mean, yeah, the price versus the production versus the shipping and the weight. I mean, you'd almost have to create it like a blow mold or something to even get it, you know. Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. Sure. So, so are you looking at, I know with you've done exclusives with PowerCon, are there going to be any like store exclusives or like Entertainment Earth or any of those places that carry your stuff?
I haven't committed to anything like that so far. I have a few ideas though. I have a few cool ideas that I could do some repaints for a few things. I don't want to give anything away right now, but you know, that the armor lends itself to being repainted. Some of the troopers do as well, so you could see something pop up later on, you know, just for fun. So
that. I was looking at stuff. I'm like, oh, that would look cool painted like this. And It looked like it would definitely lend itself to a lot of creativity. A lot of things you can kind of pay homage to with that. So,
Plus, I'm a fan of a lot of things. So there's certain homages I could definitely be okay with.
I'm sure. Eric, you got anything, man?
No, I mean, the one thing I was going to ask is, you know, it's been such a big boom period for independent toy makers and artists. Do you feel like that accelerated in 2020 and 2021 when a lot of people are at home and getting more creative at home? Do you feel like there was a bigger boom now because of that, or do you feel like it's been pretty consistent from, you know, years before that? Do you feel like that's something that just kind of people are like, I'm at home, you know, I can commit my personal designs to this and create something new and original?
It's hard to say. I think 2020 did help the industry as a whole, just because of all the online shopping. So that may have motivated more creativity, you know, just in general. But I feel like the indie toy companies were kind of on this path anyway, and because they had been building even before that. And plus, you know, again, like with all the resources becoming more and more available, you know, I think a lot of this was just kind of going in that direction. But yeah, the 2020 thing, it might have affected it. It might have accelerated a little bit, but yeah. I think it was happening anyway.
Okay. And also, like, because a lot of this also reminds me of the independent music scene and stuff like that, where, you know, like you said, you know, the bands that you liked as a kid that were young and, you know, full of fire, and then they became bigger than life, and now they're the ones, you know, out there. And then the undercurrent is the independent people now taking those inspirations and going out and really putting the time and footwork in and making themselves known. And that's what it reminds me of, is, you know, seeing these guys just full of fire going out, going, we're going to go out, we're going to promote our stuff, we're going to make our own stuff, our, you know, ourselves, we're going to do Kickstarters. That's what excites me about it, is it reminds me a lot of that, of being a musician and seeing all these young artists going, okay, well, screw it. We'll do it ourselves, and we'll do a Kickstarter, and we'll come up with our own art style and designs. And we're, you know what, we're going to do something that's going to knock your socks off, and you're going to be all about it, and, you know, get ready. You know, that's why I really, really think it's the past 10 years has been really cool, of all the new stuff that's been coming. And yeah, I do collect stuff that's, you know, the bigger companies. I'm a big Ghostbusters fan, and I collect horror stuff. I, you know, court NECA, McFarlane, even Mattel. I'm a big wrestling fan. I collect that stuff. I also like all the new stuff that's coming that's just different. Something that I've never seen before or didn't think about until I saw it. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's insane. You know, that to me, that's what I'm really looking for even the next several years, that we're going to see a continuation of this, you know, get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope so. And to your point about the indie music scene, I think you can see parallels in a lot of creative industries. You see it in comics, even video games. There's a lot of people making their own video games now, and so I think that there are certain commercial industries that incorporate art as their foundation, and those are the industries that you're seeing a lot of indie movement, you know, in a more creative direction. I think that's balancing all the more, you know, commercial stuff, because I think there's sort of an instinct with a lot of the creative people that, you know, we need to basically push this industry in the right direction so that it doesn't become a complete commodity. And, you know, that it's not really that much different if, you know, it's music or comics or whatever. It's, you know, it's creative people creating new things.
So I can't wait till we get to the point where I'm walking down the aisle at a Target and I'm like, man, those guys are sellouts. I remember when they were cool. Yeah. And they had that booth of PowerCon that was all small, and they were giving out samples of their swords and stuff. Now they're like, they're, you know, I can't wait till we get to toy hipsters.
It might happen. Who knows?
Yeah. It's like, I remember we had that guy on the podcast. Yeah. Now he's worth like $3 billion. They took his stuff and turned it into a cartoon. Yeah. Or whatever. Yeah. So,
I would love to see a cartoon. I'm not going to lie about that.
Yeah. And to Eric's point, though, with the independent side of things, you it's very, I mean, in a way, it's very punk rock. It's very do it yourself. It's like, look, I'm going to do this. And the gates are open now. There's no longer that mystique about, well, how did they get that done? There's factories, and there's connections with factories. I know a lot of the guys in the indie toy scene, and a lot of them use like the same factories. Like we got a connection for this factory, and this guy is going to help facilitate all this. And it's great because, I mean, everyone's, for the most part, are working together, and there's a really, really true sense of community. Even though your stuff is, you know, completely 180 from, say, a Four Horsemen, but it still feeds, and the energy's there, and it's great. It's a great community.
Yeah, it really is, and I really felt that at PowerCon. That was such an important show, I think, at least for me anyway, because, you know, when I'm doing this job basically in my studio by myself all the time, you know, and you sort of lose sight of whether or not what you're doing is important. But when you go out and you talk to the people and you're around the other people who are doing similar things, then you realize like you are part of a bigger thing that actually matters for this particular industry. And, you know, that really motivated me. And it happened at just the right time because I was, you know, prepping for the Kickstarter. So I was really, really happy with how PowerCon went. It was a really good experience.
No, I run two comic and toy shows here in Indiana myself. And they're very reminiscent of PowerCon. I try to get independent toy manufacturers there. I've had Spiro come up. I've had Phantom Starkiller with his Killer Bootlegs with his Phantom Starkiller figures, and we just had Tim Barron at our show, and he's got figures coming out through Super 7 as well. So I've always leaned that way. So PowerCon to me is, I joke and I say, it's my third favorite show behind my two. So I love that show. Absolutely. What Val and that team's done over there is I tell everybody, I'm like, if you have a passing interest in action figures, go to that show. It is absolutely bonkers, all the stuff you'll find there. Beautiful show. I absolutely love it. I'm depressed they're not coming back next year.
Yeah, I was disappointed to hear that. Going back again next year. So I guess maybe I'll have to take a vacation or something.
Well, maybe I could pay off a credit card or two. I felt it this year. I felt it. So, yeah. Go ahead and before we hop off here, go ahead and plug the Kickstarter, where they can find your information, all that stuff.
Yeah, so you can go to the Kickstarter if you go to cyberzoic.toys. It's super simple, and it'll take you right to the Kickstarter page, and you can see everything that is up right now. We've unlocked, I believe we've unlocked 4 stretch goals so far, and that's like full sets. It's not just one thing. It's like each set contains three things, which is like an animal, a human, and an armor set. So we've unlocked quite a bit of stuff already, and we still have, I believe, 5 more possible unlocks. So, so check it out, see what we have, and if you like what you see, back it. It's always the most helpful when you back on Kickstarter, and that's always going to lock in the best price. In addition to that, my main website is creative-beast.com. And that's where you'll find all my Beast of the Mesozoic stuff. And I have a shop there. You can buy any of the dinosaurs that are still available. So
awesome. Awesome. No, it's great to actually get to talk to you. Typically when I see you, it's been at PowerCon the last couple of years, and there's usually people around, and I'm like, I'll come back.
Well, it's also possible I wasn't there because I'm oftentimes distracted by all the other stuff.
I limit myself to like a day and a half. I can't do all the days because I'd go insane. I'd rent a U-Haul truck to get everything back. So yeah.
Yeah. You can definitely, spend a lot of money. There's that retro toy shop down the street too. So,
oh, big fun. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
I map out, and then I'm like, okay, so we're in Columbus, so that means if I drop through Cincinnati, I can stop at these 3 stores.
That's right.
Come back, yeah, it's bad, bad news. It turns into the a very, very expensive road trip out there from Indiana. So awesome. Always fun stuff. Well, sir, thank you so much for joining us and talking toys and man, we wish you nothing but success. Again, I hope, go back to what I said earlier. I hope you're one of the guys. I'm like, man, that guy's a sellout. He's worth billions of dollars, you know, because your stuff takes over, you know, the toy aisles and stuff down the road. I think it'd be great. Your stuff's absolutely amazing. Everything about it. So
thanks. Well, I hope I can just keep making cool stuff. That's the goal, you know.
It's looking good. I can't wait to see what's happening after this Kickstarter. I'm one of those people who's like, yeah, this is cool, but what about this? What about that? Yeah. So
I'm familiar with that. Yeah.
I'm never satisfied, right? I mean, we're toy collectors, right? We're always looking. So
it's a good sign. It's a good sign that, you know, you're interested to see more. So it's a good place to be.
Absolutely. All right. Everyone, thanks for joining us. Signing off. This is Billy, and thanks for joining us on Off the Card. Appreciate it.
Thanks.